Our crowds are dwindling. The people who enjoy old time fiddling are not around so much anymore. So we've had in the past, we always had somebody who was a traditional New York State old time fiddler for those concerts, and they get paid. And so now we are having somebody come in and play, but they might have some jazz influence, or they might have some bluegrass influence, or something like that. It's not just all traditional old-time fiddling. And then they'll play for an hour, then there's a break, and musicians that are there can get up and play, have a jam session, and play the traditional music that we love. And then the final hour is another hour of the guest artist. So that goes all the way through the summer. Excuse me. Except in the last full weekend in July, we have what's called the Fiddler's Picnic. And NISCA helps us fund these summer concert series, and it helps us big time with the Fiddler's Picnic because we have a guest artist play concerts on Saturday and concerts on Sunday. And they entertain for the whole weekend, and we have food, and we have it's really a festival, kind of a festival thing. And so that's mainly what we do for that weekend. And we've started now planning already for next summer. And then in the second week in August, we have what we call Kids Camp. So on Saturday, the kids, any kids that want to, can come. And we work with them on playing instruments, mostly string instruments, but violin, guitar, and some piano. So they get a taste of what our music is like. And they do crafts and all kinds of things. We have food they like and try to show them a good time. Used to be an overnight thing. We don't do that anymore. It's just too hard. So, but it's a great thing for the kids to be exposed to. And so we hope to be able to get into the schools, but we haven't really worked too hard at that, but we'd really like to. So that's something to look forward to in the future. Our season usually ends in September. We used to do it until the end of September. We're cutting back a couple because our funding has been cut back. And that's important part is whether you've got money to fund 10 concerts a year or 15 or what you've got. And right now we're doing 15. Each chapter, we have different chapters around the state, and each chapter has the opportunity to play for one of the Sundays concerts. And that's always nice. It's good to get people there that don't get there every week, like some of the locals do, you know. So it's good.
What are your hopes for the organization's future?
What's that?
What are your hopes for the organization's future?
Well, I hope to keep it alive. That's the main thing, you know. The music doesn't draw as many people as it used to, but it's really a wonderful. The museum is a wonderful place to visit. We have a Hall of Fame that honors old-time fiddlers from North America or just New York State fiddlers. So every year we plan to induct one New York State and one North American, but we get nominations, people send in nominations, and that's the way that works. So in the Hall of Fame part of the museum, that's what that part does, is honor those people. And then in the museum part is all kinds of pictures and artifacts and biographies and all kinds of, all those CDs that were created by the Folklore Society, they're all theirs. Anybody can listen to them if they want to. And we're trying to set up a thing where you can use iPads, things like that, to select who you want to hear. We're trying to get that set up, maybe in the Hall of Fame, and have it so that you can push a picture of the guy and he can, his music will roll out. We're trying to get that set up. We got a grant last year from Northern New York Library Network, and they were able to help us get some of those Hall of Fame inductees into a YouTube channel. And so that's so people can access it. You know, when you go on our website, you're supposed to be able to choose this one and hear his music or her music. So hopefully that all works out and we can keep doing more of that as we move along. Those kinds of things, to get our music out into the world where other people know about it and might come to visit us. So that's what we hope for.
What does old-time fiddling mean to you?
It's hard to tell. I love to dance. I always say that the reason I didn't learn to fiddle was because I loved to dance. And it didn't take me long to see that fiddlers don't ever get to dance. But I just really enjoy it. It's a whole different thing than anything you hear in public today. Maybe if you went to Nashville and you went to the Grand Ole Opry, the museum, you might hear some fiddling. But most of the time, you don't. There's a little more interest nowadays in bluegrass, but they don't emphasize fiddling as much as we do. And I just think it's a great talent and it's a great history that we like to keep carrying on. Great tradition. So.
How do you think we can inspire more people to be involved?
Well, I think our best bet is to get the music out, like I said, on the internet, out into New York's New York Heritage has a lot of material of traditional things. And I'd like to get down the road someplace, I'd like to get some of our stuff out on that. That's an internet resource. So I don't think having fiddlers up there every week, I mean, we're very remote where we are. And I don't think having fiddlers up there every week, it's wonderful and it's enjoyable, but I don't think it's going to keep fiddling alive. I think we have to get it out to the rest of the world.
How has being a librarian influenced your work now with these organizations?
Well, quite a bit. Quite a bit. I wouldn't have known anything about cataloging, and I don't know how my mother figured it out. She was the one that started the association and the museum. She was a co-founder. But she had a catalog started maybe 8 years ago. A girl came on board who was a lady, came on board who's a retired, she worked in museums all her life, and she was retired and moved back to Camden where she grew up. And we enrolled her as the conservator at the museum. And so she's done just a great job. And I understood what it was she was going to do, but if I hadn't had that library experience, I might not have understood how important it was to do what she did. She was just great. She was really archaeological bent to her work. And one day she picked up a piece, I think it was of a bridge piece that goes on the violin. And she said, whose writing is this? And I said, it's my mother's. And she said, well, it says it's ivory. But she said, I don't think it's ivory. I said, what do you think it is? She said, I think it's bone. I said, well, I'm not going to argue with you. If you say it's bone, it's bone. So that kind of thing, you know, was just amazing to me that she could look at something like that and know what the difference was. I wouldn't have known. My mother didn't know. So it was, she's been a marvelous addition. She's got everything, just about everything, I think, cataloged in that museum. There's like 5,000 artifacts and things that are in our catalog now, all recorded, all photographed, all everything you're supposed to do with a museum. So it's really been a big benefit having her on board.
Do you still dance?
Hmm?
Do you still dance?
I can't dance anymore. It's not, I got up and did a slow dance with my son at an event we were at. But I wouldn't have danced with anybody else. If my husband was still alive, I'd probably dance with him, but I certainly can't square dance anymore, and I can't jitterbug anymore. But I still would love to dance.
Could you talk about any particular concerts or performances that are particularly memorable to you?
Well, there's a few people that are that have come, especially for the Fiddler's Picnic weekend, who are famous fiddlers, some from Canada, some from the United States, but very, and there would be no other place that we would get to see them if we hadn't had them come to the picnic. And it's really wonderful. Now with my bed and breakfast, I can give them a place to stay, and they do their rehearsals in my living room. So it's really wonderful when that happens. It's just, you know, it's really great. So I think probably getting to know some of these really famous, renowned fiddlers probably is the most wonderful part of being involved. And you get to know a lot of just normal, down-to-earth, good people. We have a wall of friends in the museum, fiddle friends, and it's people who just come to enjoy the music, you know, usually an older couple, get up and dance. And, you know, there was no other place I would probably meet those people and get to know them so well. And so that's a great part of it. It's really special.
How involved is the rest of your family with?
My daughter's still very much involved. She promised us she wouldn't quit. She just dropped back. But I have a sister who's quite involved now. She's helping us set up the concert season for next year, getting the artists lined up and who's coming. We have a schedule of about 3 years. So if you played 3 years ago, then maybe this year it's your time, your name will pop up again. So we, you know, that makes it a little bit easier. So that's about the end of it. My older sister was somewhat involved, but she's in a nursing home now, so she doesn't, but she still tries to play the fiddle, which is good. It's good for her. I take her over to when I go and visit sometimes, they have a coffee hour on Thursdays, and I take her over there, and they have a piano. It's out of tune, but they have a piano, and we play for the people. She's not as good as she used to be, but she tries, so it's nice. Gives her something to smile about.
Is old-time fiddling for everyone?
Hmm?
Is old-time fiddling for everyone?
No. It's not. I was trying to think, there was an old man that came in and listened to us last time. What was it he said? Well, he said, that's good, but I like... I can't remember what he said. Whatever kind of music he liked. But certainly not for young people. They don't seem to have any. And we've always tried to encourage young folks to get involved and learn how to play, and especially kids that are in school in the orchestra, you know. And it's really difficult. Sometimes the teachers don't want them to learn how to fiddle, because they think it's an altogether different thing than playing the violin. Well, it's not. It's just the difference in the kind of music you play. You don't develop any bad habits from playing the fiddle, because it's good to have the right position and the right fingering, and, you know, the things that make a violinist good make a fiddler good. It's just a difference in the way the music you play, that's all. But sometimes music teachers don't want you to encourage kids to play the fiddle, which is sad. Because with the fiddle, you could find places to play all your life. With the violin, there's not symphony orchestras in every town, you know? So I think that's important. Should I say something about my work on the Tug Fiddler Commission?
Please, yeah, if you'd like to.
Okay. I have been a member of the Tug Hill Commission. The area we live in is called Tug Hill, and it's a special area because in the wintertime we get the most amount of snow east of the Rockies. We get heavy duty snows. It's not unusual for us to have 200 to 300 inches of snow a year. It's more unusual now than it used to be. But so the municipalities, the towns on Tug Hill are small. They're all small. And they're all small for the same reason I said Osceola was, because at the turn of the century, people started leaving. And so all these small towns have trouble finding people to help run things and getting help with all the things you have to do to meet the state mandates in these small towns, and some of them, not all the educated people. They're, you know, they're farmers and they're whatever work you do, factory workers and loggers and people like that. And they want to help run their towns, but they don't really have all the expertise. So the Tug Hill Commission was formed in the 70s, late 70s. No, yeah, late 70s. To help these small towns on Tug Hill to conduct business and stay afloat. So I've been on the Tug Hill Commission since 1984, so I'm the veteran member. And we meet once a month usually in different places all around Tug Hill. And people, maybe the supervisor or the town clerk or somebody will come to the meeting, and if they have questions. We have circuit riders that go to the board meetings that help the towns manage things, that they can take questions and go back and find the answers for them. All these people are people that work for a living. And, you know, by the time they get home from work, the state offices are all closed and they don't know who to call anyway. So our circuit riders are very valuable in helping conduct business for the towns. So it's really a fulfilling position to have. And I'll have to be dropping out here before too long probably, but it's still a great thing to do. I really have enjoyed being on the commission. So that's important.
How has the commission changed since you've been involved?
When they first started setting it up, local people were just up at arms. And I think most of it was a result of the state has an Adirondack Park agency. And the state has always told the Adirondack Park what to do. You have to do this, you have to do that. Well, when people on Tug Hill began to hear about them starting this, they didn't want anything to do with it because they didn't want to have the state telling them what to do. Well, we finally convinced them, and it's amazing the difference in the people that are in office right now are really appreciating what we do, and they see the value of it. But it was a hard road in the beginning to get it all going. So that's the biggest difference, is that people are really understanding what we're all about now, but it's taken a while.
What does community in Tug Hill mean to you?
It's hard because we're so divided, we're so separated mileage-wise. For instance, Osceola is in Lewis County. We are in the southwest corner of Lewis County. And it's 45 miles to the county seat. And it's woods. My father and mother always called it, if they were going to Lowville, they were going across the woods. That's the way they termed it. They were going across the woods. And so it's hard not to have connections close by that are part of your circle. Because they're so far away, they're not really part of your circle at all. They're just, you know, too far away. In some places, they have, you know, it's not as remote as Osceola is, but Montague is, and, you know, up there in Montague, there's, I don't know, whether there's even 100 people in town, and they have trouble finding people to fill their elective positions. It's really difficult, but knowing that there's other people that are suffering the same problems as you do, and the Tug Hill Commission can bring them all together so that they do feel like community and they do have the same, they can have the same discussions about what's going to happen and how we should do this. And I think it's very important.
What do you think is going to happen in the future?
I think Tug Hill will just keep, the population will keep getting smaller. And I can't imagine what's going to happen. There probably will be mergers of some of the townships, I would think. I know that already we have had maybe four or five villages that have just merged with the townships they are in, and just because they don't have enough people to keep everything going in a village and the town. So they just have dropped the village. And it's quite a procedure to go through that, because it's a whole state thing you have to do. But the commission helps with all that too. But we don't have any cities. Watertown, town of Watertown is the nearest thing to a city we've got, and it is busy. But they have problems, different problems, because of their location next to the city. You know, they have different problems than all of us out in the boonies do. It's an interesting, and it's all volunteer, so that's good. Doesn't cost the state or the people anything. So, well, the state pays, you know, the state gives us funding, but it's not something we have to be careful what we spend, because the state doles it out very carefully. So.
What would you tell other people about living in a small community? What would you want them to know?
I think you find it worthwhile. I think living in a small community is you know, the only time I have never lived in a small community was just a year and a half. You know, when I worked out in Syracuse, and I wouldn't go back for anything, especially after I watched the news on Friday night. But living in a small community, you're never alone, even though you're in a small community. I can pick up the phone and get help for anything I need, you know, and it's valuable, and that your neighbors are all good, and you get to know people, a lot of tourism, a lot of leaf peepers in the fall, and snowmobile riders in the winter, and fishermen in the spring. There's always stuff going on. So I think being in a small community is a wonderful way of life.
Are there any final thoughts you'd like to share before we wrap up?
Oh, there probably should be. I guess just to say that I owe so much to my parents and my grandparents for providing us with the lives we've had. All my siblings have remained fairly close. My brother, however, is in Saginaw, Michigan, but he always makes it home every year and loves to come back. So it's just very, very special, the relationship we've all had with with the rural community and the